So, Brad, I got big news today. Today is, for me, the greatest day a cartoonist can have. Do you know what's happening today on my end of things?
I have a few guesses, but why don't you tell us?
I guess that could get weird real quick. No. For me, the big news of the day is that I am taking receipt of my Drive books, my hardcover for Act 2 of Drive, and that's super exciting.
Oh, that's, yeah, you're right. So, do you know, you have a window? What's the story?
They're coming between 2 and 5, the trucker, and so I've cleaned out like a mother hen preparing for a little egg to arrive. I have cleaned, I've vacuumed my garage, I've swept, I've hand-polished the gorilla racks that I have in there, and...
What's your process? Because I always wonder if I'm doing it right. While the guy is there, or if it's a female trucker while the woman's there, do you open up a box and inspect it before you let them go? What's the right thing to do in a situation?
Oh, you know what? I've done that once. I did take delivery of a Sheldon book, like book 6 or 7 for Sheldon. Had just a gash down the pallet. It came in 3 pallets, and one of the pallets, it's almost like a forklift drove through it. And so I had to make an official claim right there with the guy. He's like, oh, yeah, there's going to be a problem. And but he made very clear. He's like, hey, when I loaded it up on a truck, it looked like this. So it's not me. Every once in a while, I will take an X-Acto knife out. And the problem with that is that it takes a good solid 5 minutes to get into a pallet because usually there's a pallet topper on it. That's wood. You take that off, and then it's plastic wrapped. You take that off.
Yeah.
And then it's metal strapped, and you take those off, and then you have to cut into one of the boxes. So anyway,
those metal straps are the worst. I mean, they're great for security, but they're the worst to get.
They do the job, but you almost need a bolt cutter to get them open. Anyway, I'll peek into the box. I'll do a quick eyeball inventory of the number of books and just double check it against the bill of lading. And then I usually tip the guy 10, 20 bucks.
Oh no, was I supposed to be tipping?
Well, I'm a nice person, Brad. That's the difference between you and
I. Gee whiz, I never even thought of tipping. Oh, I'm a horrible
Brad Geiger,
person.
Good human being.
No, the thought never crossed my mind.
Well, I usually ask them a very specific way if they can place the pallet, and sometimes it's a very dance they have to do with one of those pallet jacks,
oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But sometimes if you ask the person to put the pallet in a very specific spot, it literally saves you 20 minutes and a bunch of back problems, depending on where you have to unload it from, you know?
Oh, sure.
So I just introducing you to a concept. Usually when someone does something nice for you, Brad, what you do is you do something nice in return. And that's usually monetary since it's a job. And that's what we call a tip in American nomenclature. So I give them a tip to say thank you for the kindness that they've done for me. Brad Geiger, learning about basic niceties.
I wasn't being completely, listen, I wasn't being completely a bore. I gave him a real firm handshake and patted his shoulder and told him I really appreciated it.
I like the idea that the guy, while he's helping you, he's like dropping all these hints. He's like, boy, sure is cold out. Hope all 5 of my kids got to school okay. Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's tough to have kids. You better get going.
Going to be an expensive trip to the supermarket today. Cough, cough. And Brad's like, well, sure has been nice getting these books from you. Thanks so much. Here's a firm handshake. All right. I did my part as a citizen.
Is that your internal voice for me? I'm a whole falsetto higher than my baritone.
Oh, can't wait to get back to Disneyland. Do-do-do-do-do. Anyway, have a nice day, Mr. Truck Driver. Gotta go.
Holy cat. I am not typically a cheap individual, I don't think, but it never occurred to me to tip the truck driver. It wasn't a tip. I didn't think it was like a tippable job.
Well, no, as I was saying, I'm a person that, for something like that, it makes a big difference to my back when they drop off the pallet in a specific way. So another thing that I do, and this is no joke, is before I start moving, 4 to 10,000 pounds of books, I take two Tylenol for my back, and I put on a back brace that I bought, a huge Velcro, almost weightlifting kind of a back brace, because I'm old, Brad. I'm old, yeah, and my body doesn't work. But, yeah, you know, when you move 5,000 to 10,000 pounds of books, you're going to feel it tomorrow morning. And so,
oh, absolutely,
as excited as I am today to get those books all snug in their racks in my garage, I know that tomorrow morning I'm going to wake up and go, oh, God, oh, Lord, what have I done?
So when will you be putting your truss on? I mean, do you have to kind of get used to it? Is it like a corset where you steadily make it tighter? What's the right way to wear a truss?
It is kind of like a corset. I have somebody usually put, yeah, a foot in my back, and then they just pull the strings really hard
and tell you to breathe in.
Yeah, and then I ask for my snuff box, and then.
Oh, God, listen, before we get any further down this rabbit hole, we better start the dang show.
Well, the last thing that I do, sorry, just to finish this topic, before I load up the books is I called my friend Brad Geiger and I say, hey, Brad, how was that special date you took your wife out on last night? Oh, it was great. Oh, we had the best dinner of our life. Oh, the food was delicious, perfectly cooked. The service was amazing. They came right on time. And I said, oh, Brad, how much did you tip? Oh, I never leave a tip. Oh, I just tell those jerks can just go run off and tell their mama they raised a dummy.
I thought I had successfully navigated away from the tip and into the truss.
on that note, I will say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics
and making a living from trusses. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend who is kind to his fellow human beings, Dave Kellett. Cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We have a bunch of questions that have come in from kind Patreon supporters, and I'm excited to dive in on these. And why don't we just jump right into it? You want to read the first one out?
Absolutely. This one comes to us from our backer named Jeremy. Jeremy says, where can I find the right sound effect words to use for comic action? I know that there has to be a list of several good words for each action somewhere. I've tried writtensound.com and comicbookfx.com, but neither provided a good list of words for actions. For example, opening the door, smoke bomb dropping, etc. Is this just something you figure out as time passes with your own list? If so, what are your sound effects words? Dave Kellett. Jeremy wants to know, what are your sound effect words?
So they're not talking fonts, right? They're not talking SFX fonts.
They're not talking fonts. No, they're talking about the words that you use for sound effects.
Like if a door is opening that you could, what do you go with, creak, or do you go with, or like, right?
Exactly.
So my sense is, before I answer this question, is that this person probably comes from a place where they feel stronger about their drawing than they do about their writing. Wouldn't you say that's a good guess, Brad?
Interesting. I like where you're going with this, so I'm going to co-sign it so far, yeah.
Okay, because what I'm getting at is, to me, onomatopoeia is one of the most naturally fun and subjective things you get to do in comics.
Yeah.
You get to create whatever the heck you want to create with onomatopoeia. So if you're looking for someone to give you permission to just go hog wild and create whatever words you want to create, then here is me saying to you, absolutely, go to town, have fun.
Yeah.
And if you feel like, well, I don't know what the right word is, it's whatever you feel is the right word. Onomatopoeia is more than anything else about feeling. You're expressing sound through text, but you're also creating the mood of the scene. You're creating the tonality of what people are seeing and feeling as they're walking through that moment in that scene. So if it's a thunk, or if it's a clank, or if it's a wham, or if it's a bam, it frankly doesn't matter as long as it's in the ballpark. But secondly, it does matter because it's whatever the feeling you want to portray is best captured by. Wouldn't you say, Brad? What are your thoughts about this?
Well, yeah, you put it a lot more nicely than I would have put it. But if you find yourself in a situation where you're confronted with a creative challenge and your first and the first thing that comes to your mind is, oh, I should go to the website and find a list of answers. As a creative person, you should be champing at the bit to answer that question for yourself. In fact, your mindset, in my opinion, your mindset should be such that if someone were to suggest to you to go to a website to find sound effect words, you should be insulted. This is what you got into creative endeavors to solve, is exactly this question. What does the sound of a wet sponge when it hits the bottom of the kitchen sink sound like? That's the question that you should wake up in the morning salivating over. Oh my gosh, I get to come up with that sound effect. That you shouldn't be wondering about what other people's answers to that question is. You're a creator. You're an artist. You're a writer. You should be desperate to answer that question for yourself. Think about it. And by the way, you've got a creator like Don Martin. And if you're under the age of, let's say, 40, and you don't remember the classic Mad Magazine and The Usual Gang of Idiots, look up Don Martin. Not only did he have a very distinctive writing style, but if you talk about comic book or comic sound effects with anybody, Don Martin's name is going to come up immediately, because he came up with amazingly descriptive, offbeat, wild sound effect words that nobody else could have come up with. Kersplosh, kersploink. You could go look him up. I'll wait. Go look him up. Yeah. You can turn the podcast off. Look this guy up. That is what your aim should be. The Don Martin level of creative sound effects. You don't get that by looking up a list on the website. This is a creative question. You should, as a creator, be absolutely jumping at it, don't you think?
Yeah, I am a little bit surprised that you said that my response was nicer than your response. I feel like we come to this with the same verve. Although maybe you just meant that as someone who tips versus someone who doesn't tip. Is that what you were getting at? Is that what you were getting at? I want to clarify.
Yeah, well, that you'd be 15% right.
All right, now listen, I'm telling you as a friend, that's the last time this show that I'm going to make mention of that. I'm not going to bring it up again. So anyway, the book that you want to look for go to your library and in the district, your library district, request this book, The Completely Mad Don Martin.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful box set that they put together, I don't know how many years, 5 years ago or so, 6 years ago?
Yeah.
And it's great. I'm also going to give you more reading material. And what Brad and I are trying to do is we're just trying to give you art, to give you permission to create your own words. You're going to soak up artists that are already good at this. And one is Don Martin from Mad. Another one that I'm going to give you, it'll take you a half hour to read the whole book, is Roald Dahl's The BFG, which is the big, I think it's the Big Friendly Giant. I always want to say the Big Fucking Giant, but I know that's not it.
My kid came home with BFG and I'm like, what the hell does that stand for?
honestly, if you reread just the middle five chapters of the BSG, I mean, Dahl came up with words like scrumdiddlyumptious.
Yeah.
Now, Brad, you tell me what the heck scrumdiddlyumptious is. But if you think about that word and you feel it as you say it out loud, you absolutely understand what scrumdiddlyumptious is, because he conveyed a mood of like the giddy joy of deliciousness hitting your tongue. And that's scrumdiddlyumptious, you know? So take a look at Don Martin, take a look at Roald Dahl, and then also just know from Brad and I that you have permission to just go nuts, have fun with it.
Yeah.
One of the most fun things you can do is come up with that sound effect word, that onomatopoeia that just nails it.
Yeah.
And then even more fun is marrying that word with the correct way to display it. And again, the correct way, quote unquote, is whatever way conveys that mood in the best way you want it to be conveyed. So.
Oh yeah. Cause we could go on for another hour and talk about the typography choice that you use.
Oh yeah,
there,
absolutely.
And how to warp that type so that the type looks like the sound that it's making. That's a whole nother arena of creativity that you should be also very, very excited to do.
Because, and I think Brad will echo this, When you get to do a sound effects font versus a body font or a text font, that's Christmas. Yeah. That's just so fun, you know? If it's a wet sponge hitting a kitchen sink, like Brad said, that's a heavy, wet, you know, kind of squishy font. If it's an electric shock of you know, Electro hitting Spider-Man with a bolt, that's got, it's a jaggedy, electrical, sharp, painful font, you know? So have fun with it, because that can be one of the most fun things you do. It's frankly when fonts become the most character-like, where they convey the mood of a person, you know?
Oh, and like we've talked about the Blambot sale, we talked about the Comicraft sale, and I always load up on sound effect fonts. However, when I use a sound effect, you can bet that I'm not just using that font. I'm using that font and then warping it, or I'm going to make sure that Alex colors it a certain way, or I'm going to slide it into that panel a certain way. The font itself is just step one. There's a whole lot that you can do after that. Oh, one quick note I wanted to mention, by the way, Dave, because we're going to, because I actually experienced this just as we're buttoning this thing up. I was at a flea market, and there was a bunch of Don Martin paperbacks there that I remember having when I was a kid.
Oh, the little slim ones, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. And I remember having a bunch of them, and I bought five or six of them for a buck, brought them home to share with my kids. And I started leafing through them, and Don Martin, definitely read Don Martin to pick up the joy of sound effects. Do not read Don Martin and think that his humor stood up well over the last few decades. There's a lot of stuff there that is very, very unkind towards all kinds of different people.
Oh, no, really?
And oh, yeah.
Oh, Brad, I'm reacting like this because I honestly haven't read Don Martin in 30 years. But...
Oh, no, neither had I. Neither. And it's like you forgot. Yeah, just a whole, I won't go into details, but listen, just a whole lot of stuff that even I, and I'm a white privileged guy, you know, there's a lot of the stuff that I don't see until I take a moment to look, you know what I'm saying when I say that?
Right.
And it was like slapping me across the face, how I would not accept that, those kind of words, these kind of ideas. I just wouldn't like that in the things that I consume today. So be a little bit careful. He's going to go off into a whole lot of territory there that's just going to make you cringe. But do look through the sound effects. The sound effects are worth keeping. Some of that old racist, homophobic humor, maybe not so much.
Yeah, you know, it's good to talk about this because there's a lot of cherished moments from our childhood, and we're old.
Yeah,
that both memory and because you were as a child, you didn't realize or glossed over it, but now memory has also put a second gloss over it, and it's so painful as an adult when you're like, oh, Dumbo, that's what, I'm sure that was a delightful movie. I remember that as a kid.
Oh, here come the crows.
And then you get to the painfully, painfully, painfully racist crows. And you're like, good God, how was this ever acceptable? And you just kind of want to throw a shoe at your TV. It both is good because you are seeing that, at least in our mass media, we've gotten better. But it also is good to be a reminder that that's not that long ago.
It's
good
really
God,
not.
We can all do better every day with what we do. So I had forgotten that Don Martin, and now I'm thinking back through Mad, and I'm imagining too, there's a lot of sexist stuff too, I'm remembering now that I'm thinking about it.
Oh, yeah. 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 It's definitely a real, it's a white man's comic right there.
Yeah. God, isn't that true for a lot of older comics? That's a great description of it. They were white man comics. They were just like written by and for white dudes.
They just don't stand up so much.
Yeah. No. That's kind of heartbreaking when like those childhood, geez. Anyway. All right. Well, what a downer that was.
It's like finding a cherished teddy bear in the basement and picking it up and realizing that it's the back of it is all rotten and gross, you know?
Yeah.
That's the best
analogy.
You know, it's like you see it sitting there in the corner. It's like, oh, there's my teddy bear. And you pick it up and the back's been all chewed away by ants.
You're like, oh, there's my friend Boo Boo from my childhood. And then you pick up Boo Boo and he's just spouting racism at you. And you're like, what? Boo Boo?
Boo Boo, nobody was pulling your string.
Boo Boo, I don't remember you as being a son of a bitch. I guess you are.
Well, listen, I think we pretty much stopped that one to death, and I'm getting depressed. So let's move topics. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. Okay, what's the next question from a backer there that we have?
Okay, yeah, we've got another one from a Patreon backer. This is Stephen Barry, who says, "Hey guys, I'm a webcomics reader, but a book lover. Whether the webcomic is a strip or a graphic novel page, I get frustrated by the relatively slow pace of web updates. When I make things, I want to focus at the book level. How can I take advantage of social media and the benefits of the web while aiming for book-length installments?" What do you think, Dave?
Well, okay, so you have asked the two right people for this question, because both Brad and I have, for the better part of a decade and more, been producing book-length content page at a time, yeah, or half page at a time. Wouldn't you say, Brad?
Yep, absolutely.
And so on one level, I want to express sympathy and empathy with you that I, too, would love to just sit down and read the complete saga right now. Or the complete, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of another comic book. But I have to wait every month for them to produce another, whatever, how many, 32 pages, whatever a comic book is, of Saga before I can go to Fiona Staples and Brian K. Vaughan, right?
Right. Listen, I'll bring it home even more for you, Dave. I'd like to read Drive right now. But I got to wait for you to ship me that second book. I've read volume one. I don't read Drive. And that's no insult. Dave knows this. I don't read Drive on the web. I can't. But I love Drive. I read the first volume. I cannot wait for volume two to get in here. I'm ready to tip the trucker for that.
can I tell you, though, I want to give you a tiny glimpse into the insecurity of my mind. Was when you started that sentence, you're like, when you started the sentence, it was like, I don't read Drive. Why would I ever read that drivel? That thing's terrible. God, you couldn't pay me enough to read that book. Anyway, so
you heard a bunch of words that I didn't even say. I know,
but here's how that completed in my mind. But listen, Dave's my friend, so I'm going to say I read book one.
No. Now let's not pretend you don't read Evil Inc. online.
No, I actually wait for the books. It's
no,
true.
You darn right. Yeah, so before I interrupted you, what were you driving to? Just to say that, listen, there's a lot of people that don't read this the way you're assuming you read it. So what's your advice with that being in mind?
Well, I think that first of all, that's a natural inclination, and it's a natural reaction. There are probably the majority of people that want to sit down and say, give me the complete story. What if I went, if I texted Brad every day and said, so I went to the grocery store and then I waited a full day and texted him the next line and I see this dog, right? And he's looking right at me. And then I wait 24 hours and I give another. And like, that kind of storytelling drives people nuts. And naturally so. We want a complete story. We want to know that it's done. It's complete. There's arcs. They're all finished. And everything's satisfying. And it's tied up in a bow. But so much of the way that our art is produced is in part produced in stages, both because that's the way a human being creates things, but also because by releasing it in stages, we get a small distributed amount of support that lets us make the next page and the next page and the next page, so that when we get to the 300th page, we can sell that as a book. And so what I'm getting at is, both because of the way things are created and because of the way we can find support online, those are going to be trickled out page by page, page by page. But while both Brad and I would agree with you that it's more satisfying to read it when it's done, and there's nothing wrong with that, the reason why we do it is that's the pace we create at, and that's the pace that people can support us at through distributed fundraising.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's a few thoughts on this question. I want to read some of these, but I'm going to underline verbally a few words I want you to pay attention to. I'm a webcomics reader, but I'm a book lover. Whether the webcomic is a strip or graphic novel page, I get frustrated by the relatively slow pace of web updates. When I make things, I want to...
I'm not picking up on what word you're underlining there, Brad. Can you do that a little stronger?
I am a webcomic reader.
This is we're almost getting into this territory. Mrs. Ricardo, yes.
Now you're going to drive me crazy, yes, unless you... his name. It's going to drive me crazy.
Oh, he's one of the most amazing character actors from the 50s. I just love it. Whenever
Nelson.
Lucille Ball had to pick up a phone to call him, they would love putting him at like a hotel reception desk or like a haberdashery store. And he would, you just see him on the phone going, no, no.
Do you remember when he did the McDonald's commercial?
No.
Back in like the late, he did a McDonald's commercial near the end of his career, late 70s, early 80s. It was incredible. His name was Nelson something or Frank Nelson? Nelson Eddy?
Oh, I don't remember.
It's going to drive me crazy. Anyway.
You know what? So can I just end that thought with one quick thing? Whenever Glow my wife who works in television, whenever we see a character actor like that from the 50s, we always think to ourselves, he bought a third home off of doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, he probably was a very, very rich man.
Like his one bit was to go, no, no, yes. And he's like, okay, would you like to buy a third home in Palm Springs? Yes.
Yeah, and there was a guy that didn't sit there and whimper about typecasting and all this other stuff. He did one thing. They liked him for it, and he did it until the... You know what his last words were? Yes.
Well, listen. looking at the spectrum of a human life, I'm sure he would have loved to do more. But God, what an amazing career to be able to milk that one ability for like all it's worth, you know.
And while we were talking, I looked it up. It is Frank Nelson. So
is
now
it Frank Nelson?
We can rest easy. Yeah, Frank Nelson. Yeah. So listen, here's what I want to talk about in regards to this and all these I statements. You're doing, and I've talked about this one episode many, many episodes ago, understanding the difference between market research and mirror research. And you're doing a lot of mirror research. I like reading this way. I like this. I like this. Listen, I agree with you, by the way. I feel the same way, but I don't let that guide how I publish. In other words, when I publish, I'm publishing a half-page update, and I publish that twice a week, all right? Half a page Tuesday, half a page Thursday. Also, on my site, I've got all the chapters up as ebooks, and also, I put these together into graphic novels that you can get either digitally or you can get the print version, and also... I put them up on panel by panel swipes on Instagram, and also they're on a vertical scroll on Webtoon. Do you see where I'm going here? I'm putting this stuff out in a whole lot of different ways. I wouldn't read it on a thumb scroller Webtoons, but there's a lot of people that do. I wouldn't read it panel by panel swipe on Instagram, but there's a lot of people that do you see what I'm saying? Don't get caught up in mirror research where you're saying, well, I don't like this. That's fine. You don't have to like it, but you have to publish to accommodate those people who do if you want to be successful.
Right.
So don't assume that everybody is just like you. There's a lot of people that are that they're going to consume the ebook when it comes out. They're going to consume maybe chapter by chapter on a 99-cent download. Now, let's get to the real crux of the question, because it's really not a publishing question. It's a social media question. How can I take advantage of social media? Well, I've got some thoughts on that too, because when I hear a question like that, I start to get really concerned that all you think that you need to say on social media is, hey, here's my book. That's one third, less than one third of what you should be saying on social media. What you should be saying on social media comes down to what I tritely keep calling the three C's: content, commercial, and curation. You should be doing a whole lot on social media that has nothing to do with your book, because when you do release the next book, your objective is to have spent the last 3 months on social media building a community so that when you do talk about the book, people are there to listen. You understand?
Yeah.
So don't get into this mindset of, well, if I'm not talking about my book, what am I talking about? Well, a whole lot. If you want people to be around to listen when the next book announcement comes.
Right.
So you should be using social media wisely. Use the three C's. Start some conversations. Get involved. The whole point is building community so that the next announcement has some ears to listen to it. What do you think, Dave?
That was so, honestly, and I'm not saying this just to blow smoke. That was so perfectly put. I have nothing to add to that. That was great.
Wow, that's tremendous.
No, that's just me. That's just me in the background just going, yes.
That's the equivalent of a slow clap.
The slow 1980s standing clap from the back of the auditorium.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute and stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, Brad and I are going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
Yeah, because, you know, when you do, you'll get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And an exclusive Patreon post that go even deeper on the Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, no worries.
You can still support the show by rating us wherever you get podcasts.
Leave us a 5-star review and a few kind words.
And that, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
And now, let's talk comics. Hey, Dave, I think we need to move on to another topic here. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Fantastic. We've got another Patreon backer who writes, and by the way, it's our friend over there, Kayla Swain, is writing this one in. And she says, how do you guys feel about adding a chapter zero to the front of a comic? I missed out on establishing a lot of fundamental things early on in my story and thought this might be a good remedy. But do you think it would be worth the trouble? Thanks, she says. She's very polite. She even says, thank you. Dave,
listen,
what do you think?
Grandpa running a podcast. I like it when people say please and thank you in my podcast.
Well,
common courtesy, that's what's missing from our modern podcast. Why won't people say hello to each other in the morning?
And how come nobody holds the door open anymore, crying out loud?
There's nothing wrong with feeding birds in the park. Why do the police always have to move me along? I don't like this sandwich. This bread is too cold. I'm Brad Geiger.
I remember when this was all farms.
No, oh. I won't be tipping you for that lunch. Why are you asking me for this?
You promised. Trust wearer.
Okay, so chapter zero. You know what? I said I wasn't going to bring the tip around again, and I did it. What a great friend. What a great friend. That's a guy who keeps his promises.
But a good running gag. You can't fault you for that.
It's you know, it's because it's the rule of threes, Brad. I got to go back one more time. That's what it is.
Well, I'll be sure to set you up for it.
So a chapter zero. I will be honest that every artist who has ever written feels like they wish they could change some foundational thing at the beginning of their story. Would you agree with that basic tenet, Brad?
Yes, I agree.
They get to the end and they go, oh, shit, I should have introduced the magical, you know, sword in the chapter one. Darn it, well, I forgot to do that.
It's a King Arthur story, for crying out loud. I should have had a sword in there. I should have had a sword in there somewhere.
I like that idea, though. Oh, geez, I totally forgot to put the sword in the stone. It was just lying on the ground. Oh, dang it. Oh, geez, hold on. Chapter zero, we're going to go back. And the sword was in the stone.
I love that voice for the author.
Oh, Brad, it's going to be a beautiful story about kings and princesses and horses. And oh, shit, hold on. I forgot to put the sword in the stone. Oh, jeez.
Anyway, I'm going to get him over to the castle. He comes in. All these knights are sitting around the table. One's at one corner. The other one's at the other corner. Oh, shit, I did it again. And, maybe this guy should not be writing a King Arthur story. What do you think?
And they say to the king, they say, listen, baby Huey, we're going to go over and wait. Oh, no. Oh, God, wait. Hold on. The king's name is King Arthur. Oh, hold on. Jeez, I'm really shitting the bed on this one. Hold on.
Oh, gosh. Okay, listen. Yeah. Chapter zero, Dave. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
So chapter zero. So I want to start from a place of sympathy because even with Drive, I'm like, oh, I wish I had done XYZ. I'm now 9 years into the story, right? And I wish I had done XYZ at the beginning. And it doesn't matter what it is. We all have it. But I will be honest when I say that I've seen a few chapter zeros in my day. I don't know why I went
chapter zeros.
I don't know why I went to an appeal to age there. I'm an old man and I've seen a lot of chapter zeros.
It almost sounds like something you would call, you know, like an insult. He's a real chapter zero.
Yeah. that's a Tinder date description. Oh man, what a chapter zero.
Swipe left.
So I cannot think offhand of one that I thought made the book better, is my honest reaction. I think as an author, if the better way to do it is reverse engineer. And as you're writing, you start to sprinkle in an artful way, the things you wished had been in chapter zero or chapter one, and find a way to weave it in so that it feels natural and it feels like the flow is still there. And in a way, maybe it's sort of like a Hitchcockian reveal as you're going, and maybe you can make it work for you that it maybe should have been sequentially at the beginning, but now it's, in the end of the first act or something. Brad, what are your thoughts? I would like to hear what you have to say.
Well, here's a couple of thoughts. Number one, first of all, determine whether you really are at the place where you need a chapter zero, because in the whole idea of keeping your readers on a need to know basis, which we discussed a few episodes ago, you know, you don't have to have a whole info dump at the beginning of a story. It's okay to sprinkle out some of these details just before they're needed or just as they're going to be needed. And you might feel as if it would be better to have a whole bunch of world building in a chapter zero. But like Dave says, it might be more graceful to sprinkle that throughout and find a way, whether it's a flashback or what have you. It might be a better suggestion to reverse engineer it. However, I am going to say this. When I saw chapter zero, the first thing I thought was, absolutely, why not? If you're in a situation where you really, it's like, oh man, I really blew some stuff here. I really screwed it up. And if you can't gracefully reverse engineer it into the ongoing story, or whether it's just, you know, it's not working right, there's no good place to put it. You know, you can't stop a car chase and all of a sudden, oh, by the way, I'm having this flashback to when I was in kindergarten, right? You're going to screw up the flow of the story. I've got zero problems with a chapter zero. I really do. Especially if you haven't done the print version of your comic yet, and you want to put a chapter zero out there so that when the more permanent version of your comic gets released into the world, that you release it in a way that you're confident of, and that you say, this is the right way to start this story. I've got no problem with that. In fact, I think in some cases, it's the right decision.
Well, okay. So I respect that. And I guess what I should preface this by saying, it's not going to ruin the book for me if there's a chapter zero. I'm just trying to think of a book that was made better by a chapter zero, right? Like J.K. Rowling, didn't she write later for charity a chapter zero for Harry Potter?
I was not a Harry Potter reader, so I don't know the answer to that question.
No problem. But I guess what I was getting at there is that it's not like the sales of Harry Potter skyrocketed because she published the chapter zero, you know?
Yeah.
But then again, that was a book that was brought to completion and then edited. And that's a big difference from what we do as cartoonists working in segments online, right? So, there's always an opportunity when you have an edited work to go, oh, wait, you need to draw. You need to put the sword in the stone in chapter one. Oh, right. Yeah. I was going to do that part. I totally forgot. I guess another way to do this.
Wait a minute. What if it was, how would you know that they had done a chapter zero unless they actually called it chapter zero? In other words, if they just were doing a webcomic and they're getting ready to do the print version of their comic, and they wrote a special chapter zero and they just called it introduction, and you pick up the book, how would you know that it was a chapter zero?
You wouldn't, Brad Geiger with the solution. Brad Geiger solving problems over here.
I mean, you don't have to tip your hand to anybody. You can just, when you get the book out, it's like, hey, here's where we're starting the story.
Well, you know what? Okay, and I will echo Brad's point, because when it came time to bring Drive into print, there were a few, how do I describe it, free-floating pages of Drive that could have been put where I put them. But frankly, were better suited. I moved them around a little bit. Uh-huh. And no one needed to know, and no one cared. No one was like, wait a minute, wasn't this page two pages forward in the online? Yes, it was.
Yeah.
But the fact is, once I thought about it, I was like, oh, actually, this page works better as a reveal back here, you know, that kind of a thing. So that's possible. So you can also, to Brad's point, you can change the numbering system of your book and just add a chapter one, and everything moves back one. You could write it as an intro, you could write it as a chapter zero, or you could write it as a prologue. That's another way to do it.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I would even go one step further and say, if you were going to do that, I would take some, and turn a negative into a positive. And when you put the Kickstarter out, now you get to say, including special pages never before seen online.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
great.
You know,
now you're turning that into a sales point.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You're like, now, including a chapter that makes the whole thing make sense.
Read without confusion for the first time.
Special feature. Special feature for the Kickstarter. Now everything clicks into place. No. I guess as we're talking about this, Brad, you're changing my mind. You're changing hearts over here, Brad. You're changing hearts and minds.
Oh.
I actually think that, yeah, I agree with Brad that if it's something you want to do, I would trust the artist in you that you can do it artfully so that it doesn't just feel like an info dump or like you need to read these 20 pages of pure text before we start the comic. So
here's what you need to know.
Yeah, if you can do it artfully as a chapter one, chapter zero, prologue, or an intro, or something like that, that feels and matches the flow of the next chapter that come, you know, that you previously had. Then sure, why not? I'm gonna change my opinion and say sure, why not?
You softened.
I did. You made me an old softy over here, Brad.
As long as we're talking about changing minds, let's see if I can change your mind about this next question. How's that for transition?
Sure, let's do it.
Tyler Mann writes, listen, January through March is a slow time for both retail and online sales. How best can comic artists optimize this time to come back strong? Dave, what are you going to do about the Q1 slump?
Well, I think inarguably there is a definite merchandise Q1 slump. And I think, Brad, I don't pay much attention to my ad dollars anymore, but there's still an ad slump, isn't there, in the Q1?
Well, yeah. Now it's the Q1, Q2, Q3, and Q4 slump when you're talking ad dollars.
I thought you were going to say now it's the Q1 through month 12. Oh, you did say Q4. I'm a dummy. Yeah, I didn't actually listen to what you said.
Go ahead and edit my joke, why don't you? Yeah, it's I've taken all advertising off of all of my sites because it just got to be too much trouble to keep them up. It's like I'm making pennies and putting out malicious ads and possibly viruses every now and again. No thanks.
And malware, yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I don't even talk about ads anymore.
So anyway, this was just me establishing the base. So yeah, both on a merchandising standpoint and previously on an advertising standpoint, basically any way that you traditionally would make money as a cartoonist, except for Patreon, and that's a key point, things slow down in Q1. And so the way that I deal with that is I have a two-part structure. One is to make sure that I have scheduled big money-making events in summer and in fall. And so we talked about this in the last show. That's the reason why I kickstart a book to go by San Diego Comic-Con and have a big summer sale. And then there's a reason why I kickstart the second book to be out in November so that it's ready for Christmas sales. And then, frankly, it's just family and house budgeting that you stretch those bigger months to help cover the more fallow months. So that's part one. And then part two of what I do is I have increasingly come to rely on a base income from my three different Patreons, one for Sheldon, one for Drive, one for Comic Lab being the smallest of the three. that gives me a base income that lasts all 12 months. And it does have some variability to it, but I know that if I shave off 10% of my, you know, my highest Patreon numbers, I can at least rely on 90% of that income any month of the year. Brad, what are your thoughts about that?
I agree with you 100%. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to build off of what you just said.
Okay.
Maybe Q1 is a good time to plan a Patreon special offer that we've been talking about for the last few episodes, right?
Oh, that's true.
This might be the time to focus on building your Patreon followership and do a special offer to drive those pledges. That's number one. This might be a good time for that. What do you think?
I think that's great. Yeah, I mean, listen, if for all the time that you're not spending shipping in Q1, you can be planning a project, right? That's another way to look at it.
Well, actually, that's the rest of my suggestions. It's like, okay, you're not busy, good. Get busy.
Right.
Here's a few ideas of what to do when you're not shipping books. Recommit to blogging on your website. We've talked about on the show before how a lot of the reading habits happen on social media. That doesn't mean that things like SEO and web readership are completely gone. This is a good time to take a little bit of time and write some stuff for your blog. Do a little outreach in that regard. Also, recommit a little bit to social media. This is a good time to spend a little bit of extra time focusing on the three C's of social media and see if you can drum up a little attention that way. And also, going back to your site, reevaluate your house ads. In other words, I've taken all of the paid advertising off of my site, but there's an awful lot of outreach that I do in terms of selling ebooks, in terms of promoting Patreon, things of that nature. I consider them house ads, and re-look at those things. Do they need a little freshening up? Have your readers become blind to those because they see them every time they come to the site? It's a good time to give those a little freshen up. And Dave said, use this time to prep for your summer Kickstarter. You should be talking to printers, getting quotes, making plans, doing your design, do all that prep work that you're going to be thankful that you did later on. In other words, yeah, it stinks that Q1 slows down, but look at the bright side. You got time that you're not spending doing much else. Use it for when things heat up so that you're ready to attack it.
Right. And I want to underline one thing that Brad mentioned about his brilliant concept of the three C's on social media, which is there are going to come times in your year ahead where you are social media advertising for 30 solid days about a Kickstarter, right? Or a Patreon or something like that. And people are going to be driven nuts by it. So what you can do in these fallow months of January, February, March is building up your content. Just build up a lot of goodwill by giving out a lot of, and it doesn't have to be new stuff. You can also be tweeting out and Instagramming older comics that were favorites of people, right? So what I'm saying is, like Brad normally would break down the three C's over a day or a week, but you can also break it down by saying, like, over the course of this year, I'm going to need to spend some of that goodwill capital when I'm doing my constant tweeting about Kickstarter. So right now I'm going to earn a little bit of goodwill capital by giving them a lot of entertainment. So that their overall mood of, oh, Brad Geiger, I like following Brad Geiger. He makes my day better. And then you've earned the point 6 months from now when you need to tweet constantly about Kickstarter. You know what I mean, Brad? That you're
they'll take it easy on you. They won't judge you as harshly.
Yeah, exactly. And so in a way, it's kind of like a fallow month that creates a fertile month in the future, right? You're getting you're letting your field rest. This sounds terrible. I'm gonna bail out on the farming.
No. I'll go with it. Go with it. Go now plant the seeds, water it and nurture it.
And then a little water can and let that plant grow.
Yeah.
I do like when what was my name of my life coach, Susan something or other? Like
Susan McTaggart.
Susan McTaggart. Like, hello everyone, Susan McTaggart here. You're gonna have fallow months and fertile months, and you need to plant those seeds. Hi, I'm Susan McTaggart, world renowned author and of the better you in 30 days by fallow and fertile. Anyway. Susan McTaggart. I'm amazed that you remember that that voice.
Oh yeah, I loved Susan. So listen, I think we've pretty much driven that right back to being fallow. It was a very fertile topic that we've driven back to being fallow.
Wow.
I'm just trying to come up with some kind of transition to keep up with you here. But I've got a great idea,
Dave.
Okay. Here's the deal. It's 2019. We're starting a new year. We're in the second episode of the new season of Comic Lab. And we've got, to be frank with you, we've got a whole bunch of questions from Patreon backers in 2018 that for any number of reasons, we haven't gotten to yet. A lot of times it's because we took a look at it and it's like, nah, we're not going to be able to talk about that for like 15 minutes. It's going to require just a brief answer. And we've got a bunch of those that can kind of be answered briefly. And what I was thinking about is let's do our own kind of game show here on Comic Lab. We'll call it Lightning Round. We'll take turns asking these Patreon questions as many as we can get into 60 seconds and see who can answer more questions, you or me, in 60 seconds. What do you think?
Can I tell you what a child I am? As soon as you said game show, my mind flickered over to my keyboard because I wanted to tell you, I'm ready to play, Brad Geiger. I am ready to play any type of game show thing you have in mind, and it sounds like you've got a great idea here today with Lightning Round, Comic Lab, Dave and Brad. We're ready to start.
Answer.
Brad Geiger, are you ready to start with the first question, or how shall we do this? I should have checked with you before on how we were going to do this.
Well, do you have a stopwatch over on your side?
I do have a stopwatch sound. I can use this one.
That sounds perfectly. So start the stopwatch, and we'll have you ask me questions from the lightning round list first. We'll see how many questions I can answer in 60 seconds.
Really? Okay. All right. Let's do it. Okay. Here we go. You ready?
Okay.
And go. All right. Brad, I'm in the process of updating my Patreon tiers. Should I grandfather in my current patrons who are paying lower prices?
Oh. Yep. You can unpublish an existing Patreon tier, and those people stay on the tier. They don't get bumped off, and create a new tier. So just go in, look for the word unpublish, and create a new tier.
Okay.
You won't lose anybody.
Brad, I have zero audience but want to crowdfund a product. Should I focus on building an audience?
Zero audience, zero crowdfunding. It's as simple as that. You gotta build an audience, then crowdfund. Next.
This is a lightning round. Oh, my goodness. All right. Brad, I'm scared to ask more questions because I'm afraid you're going to hit me. Should we stop the game here and I can go hide in the closet?
Well, I don't want to waste my seconds on question. I got the answer. Zero audience, zero crowdfunding. Next.
I love this. Bitty, buddy, boom. You're a dummy. Next. All right.
Pull the sword from the stone.
Okay. I love how in the meantime, the clock just stopped in the background.
I'm like, Dave, you're eating up my seconds.
All right. Here, I'll start it again.
Do we want to start over?
No, Brad, is there any worth in changing my website to a Patreon page?
Absolutely not. Patreon's not for that. Patreon's for bringing your readers to. It's not for discoverability. You're not using it right.
Okay. Last question. Brad, have you ever been unintentionally controversial or offensive to some readers? Has there ever
Absolutely.
Been...
Absolutely.
Oh,
and that's when you use that old everything I learned I learned in kindergarten, everything I needed. You say you're sorry. You make steps to correct whatever hurt feelings you did. You just do what you would do as a normal feeling human being. If you hurt somebody's feeling, you say, I'm sorry. Do what you can to make it better and then move on.
And the next time you tip them when they drop off your books. Okay, good. So we finished that lightning round. So tell me when you're ready. And the nice thing is I think that sound effect that I have for the ticking clock actually is 60 seconds. So when it runs out, we will we'll see how many. You got four in that question. Are you ready to ask me as many as you can in 60 seconds?
I am ready.
All right, I'll start the clock.
Okay.
And I'm going to do Brad Geiger answers. Here we go.
Okay. What are your top recommendations for making their website for a webcomic more mobile friendly?
You're a dummy and your mother raised a dummy. Next.
What's in your go bag? A bare minimum kit for doing comics from a hotel.
Okay, I do basic necessities that I keep in a small bag that are ready to pack for a show. You know, toiletries, that kind of thing. I have, you absolutely need signage. You need flyers to capture people's attention, but make sure that you've done them affordably. Make sure that you bring a nice mix of high-value items that give you a good margin and a couple small items that, like shiny objects that catch people's eye. All right, go ahead. You know what? I didn't actually answer the first question. Should I go back and answer that one?
Go ahead. Go ahead. Give it a shot.
The honest to God truth, and Brad can chime in on this one, I have not yet made my website mobile friendly, so that was the worst possible question to ask Dave Kellett. So,
agreed. Agreed. We'll cover that coming up in 2019, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Is there any benefit to publishing your comic on a bunch of publishing platforms like Webtoons, Tapastic, etc.?
Yes, there is. I think in general, you have to go where the audience is. So you want to go to Twitter, you want to go to Instagram, you want to go to Webtastic, Tapastic, you want to go to GoComics, you want to go to your own site. You want to have a mix of those so that people can find you wherever they live naturally, and then you can direct them to the projects and things that make you money, like Kickstarter and Patreon, over time. Well, my time ran out, but I did my best.
Your time ran out. How many? And you got three questions. So,
I got three, and then I pulled the Geiger on the first one, so that one was no good.
No,
so.
I'm including that one.
Oh, okay.
I'm including that one in your three.
Okay.
So I win.
You win. Well, now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more questions. Shall I start the clock again, and Brad Geiger does
start
another?
Start the clock.
All right, start the clock.
I like lightning round.
You do? You do? All right. Here we go. On your mark, get set, and go. All right. Hi, guys. I'm considering mirroring my current comic on Webtoons, and I'm trying to decide where in the comic to start. The comic has a continuing storyline, although it's not necessarily episodic. Do I start at the beginning?
Oh.
Maybe run a best of to catch up to the main site? Start with the current chapter? Your thoughts are much appreciated. Thanks.
Start at the beginning. Time is a continuum, and you got all the rest of your life to put stuff on social media. Start at the beginning.
I agree with that. Okay. Are there standard sizes to do a Webtoon-style mobile presentation on your own site, Brad?
Standard size, no, although I would probably veer towards 1,200 pixels wide because that seems to be a pretty good rule of thumb.
Okay, Brad, how zealously should we guard our intellectual property? What if someone creates artwork that could be damaging to one's brand?
You spend more time doing that than actually creating stuff. If that happens, then you'll address it. Otherwise, don't let that stuff keep you from creating.
Yeah, don't let your anxiety rule your heart. Okay, Brad, how do you take a holiday break? Do you plan it out in July? Do a bunch of work in late November? Should you just plow through?
Nah,
oh, the clock ran out.
Oh,
geez.
Shit.
Oh, wow. I have a chance to come back. Oh, this is amazing. All right, there's three questions left. And now by law established in the 1700s, you have to ask me that same question. That I've now
that's
had time
right,
to prepare
that's right.
For.
That is true. I mean, that's the Queen of Marksbury rules, right?
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows lightning round rules. That's old.
Yes.
You can't make that stuff up. That's you have to ask
All
me
right.
that same question now. All right, here we go.
Okay,
you ready to start the clock?
Listen, I gotta start the clock, and I'll ask your question.
Okay.
Dave, how do you,
you
take
son of a, bitch.
A holiday break?
Okay, so how
you
do
know
I take
the rest
a
of it? You just read it.
How do I take a holiday break? So the way I do it is I let readers know that I'm going to take off between usually around December 23rd through January 1st or 2nd or 3rd, somewhere around there. And I need that. That's the time that builds my heart back up again. And I let them know that I'm going to take that time off for family and friends and personal time. And then I tend to run reruns of my best stuff for the year or stuff from holidays in the past. Okay, next question, Brad.
How do you figure the size for a print book run? I think he means amount of books you order.
Yeah, the quantity of the books. The way I do it now is I do the number of books that I've kickstarted. So if 1,600 people ordered a book, if 4,000 people order a book, I order that. And then I probably order 10% more, both for damage and for extra sales along the line. I no longer want an excess of books like I did in years past. I order about 10% more than the Kickstarter itself.
When out in the world, what percentage of people actually ask to see your site when you say you make comics?
Hold on. Queen Marksbury rules or whatever term we came up with. I now have to ask this question of you. So you have the chance to win lightning round. This is the last question.
Oh, that's right. I love lightning round.
All right. Here we go. All right. Brad, if you had a friend that all he wanted in life was to win lightning round, what would you be willing to do to let him win lightning round so that he could go and face his family and say that daddy didn't fail today? What would you be willing to do to let him be able to look his children in the eye and say, daddy's not a failure?
I'd tell him that I had a nice tip for him.
Okay, Brad, here's your question. When out in the world, what percentage of people actually ask to see your site when you say you make comics?
Actually, a pretty fair number. In other words, it used to be, what newspaper do you run in?
Yep.
That hasn't come up for years and years. And actually, the first question they ask me is, where can I see it online? So yeah. I'd say about 60%.
I would say
the rest of them don't give two shits and want to change the topic as soon as I bring it up.
I say as soon as we start talking about the comics, I would say about the same for me, about two thirds. One third didn't really care, and it was just social niceties. And the other two, once you start talking about it, they are actually genuinely interested. So, and then every once in a while, you get a creeper who emails you the next day and be like, "Hi, we met in the elevator, remember? Anyway, I've read through your whole site. You seem nice. Do you want to be best friends?"
Yeah, you seem gentle. I'd like to talk some more.
Hi, you seem like you had nice hands. Want to talk?
You look like you were about a size 9.5 wide in your shoes. And I just happen to have a bunch of those in my basement. Just wonder if we could talk some more. It's interesting because, like I said, it used to be what newspaper are you in? And that has pretty much died out to nothing. People don't even ask anymore.
No.
Which is very interesting. And at some point, just to tease a future show, there was a bunch of syndicated comics that got discontinued in 2018.
Oh, God. Yeah. I would love to talk about that in a show to come because I've had a couple things in the last few days that really have showed me that print, both newsprint for syndicated comics and publishing for longer form comics, really is breaking and in a way that even I was kind of surprised by. So I would like to talk about that more in the future, if that's cool with you, on a future show.
Yeah. Let's tease that for an upcoming episode. And that being the case, it's up to me to say this. You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics. Oh, wait a minute. I won lightning round. Let's read that into the record first. I won lightning round.
Brad, what is it like to be such a small man? In your heart, a cold ice of just... It's a rock made of ice is your heart. To be so small, to have to rub it in, to have a friend you knew needed this, needed it, needed a win.
Say, what does it feel like to be somebody that's actually annoyed by the fact I brought that up?
It hurts. That's what it is to be that person. It hurts in my heart. My baby soft angelic heart hurts right now, Brad.
Oh my God, I gotta bring this one to a close before you kill me. You've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been Brad Geiger, a warm human being who helps both strangers and friends, and the editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And the baby soft Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped, and 9.5 wide wearing cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
You seem nice, Brad. I like those shoes. Do you want to go out and get a coffee? Anyway, I read your entire archive in one night. I stayed up till 4. How are you? Remember we met in the elevator? All right. And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from the delightful Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode, as all episodes, was edited by the ever-wonderful Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions at www.woodsong.media.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab.
Mr. Geiger, could I have a tip?
Get out of here, kid. You're bothering me.